Welcome to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace, where changemakers work, create, and lead. Today we are fortunate to have with us Kashif Abdul-Karim, who is the resident imam of Muhammad Islamic Center of Greater Hartford. Through his faithful commitment, members of his mosque are committed to making a difference in the lives of families in the Greater Hartford region. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you here. So why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about yourself? Where did you grow up and what was your childhood like?
Okay. Well, I'm a Muslim convert, meaning I became Muslim over 32 years ago. I was born in Rockingham, North Carolina, from a Southern Baptist family with all the oil markings on my head and all of those kind of things. I grew up in the church in, like I said, Rockingham, North Carolina. I later came into Islam when I came, after I came to college, actually. When I was in college, I was a Black nationalist. I was a person who always wanted to know about anything, no matter what subject I learned, I always wanted to connect it to my Blackness. And in doing so, I remember studying the history of the African people, et cetera, and slavery. And it came across different things about Muslims being slaves in America who were Muslim. And I was like, Muslim slaves in America, why haven't I ever heard of this before? And why was there such a great practice to try to take away Islam from out of the slaves, the early slaves, slaves by the name of Allah and slaves by the name of Muhammad, people who were slaves on the plantations in that particular time. So as I began to do research, I started learning about all these Muslim countries over in Africa, and that Islam was a religion that was deeply attached to the cultural experience of the African people. And although I had, we have lost that over the years through slavery, transition, and all of the things that took place in the civil rights movement, I found that Islam was really a thing that was really attached to my cultural past. So I wanted to learn more. And so as I learned more, and I was at UConn actually doing my research, I came across these old Muhammad Speaks newspapers, which is in the microfiche. I know we probably don't even know what microfiche is. Most of the audience probably won't even know what microfiche is.
I remember it. You turn that wheel and you see things up on the screen.
They had all the old newspapers from the 60s and 70s, from the Muslim old newspapers that was written by Malcolm X and Hajj Malik Shabazz, that was written by Elijah Muhammad, all of those old papers. They even had old papers from the Black Panther movement, et cetera. So as I began to do my research, began to do those studies, I wanted to find out what was this that was being kept or secret from us as African-American people, especially growing up in the South, having no understanding or no picture, even heard or seen a Muslim before during that period. So after I graduated, I came home and I was looking for a temple, actually. And then I realized that I was looking for the wrong thing. I was really should be looking for a mosque or a masjid. And then I ran across a person who was a Muslim who I actually worked with, who was carrying a Muhammad Speaks newspaper, Muslim Journal paper, we call it today. And he said I needed to find out what this was. I said, what's this newspaper? What is this all about? Where do I get more information? And he told me where to go. And I went to the mosque at that particular time in New Haven. And I met a person by the name of a man, Madumajid Kareem Hassan. He introduced me to different aspects of the religion and answered a lot of the questions that I had about my culture and about the religion and about my history and about my experience with Christianity, et cetera. And I found a balance where I was able to practice my need to influence and help the African-American people through social justice and connected to my religion and my faith base as well. So I became a Muslim around 1986, around that time period. And I've been a Muslim ever since. And immediately after that, the imam puts you to work, puts you in the prisons, puts you in all the places doing prison ministry, education in school. Because you're a college graduate, they immediately think that you have all the answers. So they immediately wanted to put us to work and put us in these institutions as chaplains and all the things, try to create a change.
And so you said so much, and that's a powerful introduction to how you got on the path. I want to back up a little bit and talk about your faith formation. You said you grew up in the Baptist church.
Yeah.
Talk about how your family prepared you with faith, how you were formed even before you went to college.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. Because a lot of times people say, well, the Quran, the religious book of the Muslim, that's what makes a person good. But we always have to remember that it's our family ties and all faith traditions that make people into the people they are. I remember we going to church like on these Sundays and during the week and learning what's right from wrong. And my Aunt Pauline, which was a particular person who really influenced my life, she was very, very religious. And we thought at the time that she was extreme, because she would always like do these travel mercies. Every time we went somewhere, we came from the north to the south, she would always put that cross on your head with the holy oil, et cetera. And she was, we thought she was extreme, but she really wasn't. She was just trying to help us get a moral foundation in what we believed. And as I grew older, I began to understand that it really was about her putting morals in us, understanding that regardless of what faith tradition we were following, there was still good morality in everything. And that morality we learned through family life, through other religions, before I even became Muslim.
And that's a powerful example of how to be formed for faith. We're talking to Kashif Abdul-Karim, who is the resident imam of the mosque here in Greater Hartford, and we'll be back after the break.
Thanks for asking, but I'd rather not send you nude pictures. I'm camera shy. I already said no. It's against my religion. I'm giving my dog a bath. You can have pictures of that. Pressure gives me hives. Under my clothes, I'm a robot. Hold on, let me ask my mom. Sorry, my webcam is broken. I'm worried they'll get passed around school. Unfortunately, I just had my clothes surgically attached to my body. If they got out, I might never be president. I'm already naked, under my clothes. Not even if you were all three Jonas Brothers. I have a rash. I have nudophobia. I have lizard skin. The more you ask, the less I want to. You're not the boss of me. Nudity makes me vomit. I'm a vampire, so I don't show up in pictures anyways. Your badgering has really killed the mood.
When someone is pressuring you to do something you don't want to, how many ways can you say no before they get the message? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. We're talking to Kashif Abdul Karim, who is the resident imam of Muhammad Islamic Center of Greater Hartford. And in the first segment, we were talking about your faith formation, how you came to a moral understanding. And then you talked about your college years where you first became introduced to Islam. And so talk a little bit more about the cultural connection of people of African descent and Islamic faith and how that was brought with them when they came here enslaved.
Okay, when Muslims or when African Americans came from Africa, the predominant, at least 33% or more who came to this country from the West Coast of Africa came from Muslim countries. They came from Ghana, Senegal, a lot of West African places which were practicing Islam. They were Muslims. And then when they came to America, or whatever we're going to call it at that particular time, when they were put on the slave ships and they were brought over to America, it was at that time they was forced to go through transition. Quite often, even on the slave ship, they were forced into Christianity. They were told that they were to be baptized, or there was a lot of different things that they did to them on the slave ship to try to make them turn away from their religious faith. But it's interesting because if we look at the history, we find that many of the African people who were slaves at that time still found a way to protect their scholarship, still weave their religious Islamic traditions into Christianity, such as the Hajj, and it was called Saut, and the shouting, or those kind of things that we see in Christianity today. A lot of those things were practiced by the Muslim slaves on the plantations at a particular time period. And if you look at the dress and the things the women wore on the hair during slavery, they again protected a lot of the Muslim tradition, wanting to express their modesty, etc. So they began to secretly weave a lot of these cultural and Islamic traditions into their everyday lives by keeping it secret. Because if people found out they were Muslim, they would be killed. And so even if you go back and look at movies like Roots, if you go back and look at Roots again today, you'll see LeVar Burton, as we know, he was Muslim on the show with playing Kunta Kinte. You see him praying. You see when they have the resistance on the slave ship, they do a Muslim traditional janazah or prayer service for them, for the wrestler who was a leader or the imam or was the imam of the village. You see that he doesn't eat pork throughout the whole movie. You see all of these Islamic traditions that was weaved into the plantation that Kunta actually had to keep secret at a particular time period. And many of the Muslim slaves in that time period, they would write the whole Quran out on the plantation's walls.
Wow, powerful.
And the religious books. And the slave masters used to say, "What's this chicken scratch?" And that's where the term come from. They would say, "What's this chicken scratch?" Because they would see the Arabic written on the ground and this kind of stuff. And they would call it chicken scratch, but it would actually be the Arabic writing that many of the Muslims who came from Africa had. See, that's why we always try to make people understand that we've been taught that our African slaves were illiterate. They couldn't read, they couldn't write, they couldn't do all these things. They were backwards. They didn't believe in God. They were heathens, etc. But when we study the history, the actual history, we find that many of the Muslim slaves on the plantations were the accountants. They were the ones who were doing the writing. They were doing the numbering, the history books, of other things that was going on the plantation. That was what was happening. So we had a lot of scholars that were brought, people who were great thinkers and mathematicians and other things that were Muslim that were brought to this country and then forced into slavery.
And so often people hear about slavery but don't think about the fact that people may not have come here with luggage,
right,
but their intellect was still firmly in place,
right,
and their faith practice was there. They were praying on those ships in whatever way, yeah, of prayer,
yeah,
to survive that time period.
Yeah.
So when you take a look at the cultural context of African Americans and Islam, talk a little bit more about modern Islam in America.
Okay, in modern Islam in America, after the slavery came to an end in 1865, etc., there was a like down period of African American Islam in America, and it wasn't until 1930 when a person by the name of Farad Muhammad began to introduce a strange concept to America, and that strange concept of America was portions of Islam. There was Islamic concepts inside of that. The terms Muslim and Hajj and all these things were built into it, but it really wasn't the pure Islam that was the tradition that was found in that particular time period. But it still addresses the human salvation or the overcoming oppression that has always been the tool that people of color was always seeking. So even when you go back to the time of Prophet Muhammad, during that time period, people of color during that time period and even into modern times always looking for a tool to overcome oppression. And religion was the tool to overcome oppression. And for Muslims during the 60s and 70s and 50s and that time period when things were occurring, people like Malcolm X, Muhammad Ali, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, all of these people suddenly started coming up out of that because they were addressing Islam, but a cultural understanding of Islam to overcome oppression, but not the actual teachings of Islam in terms of its, we use the term proper akidah, which is the proper thinking and the proper teaching and belief system of Islam. It wasn't the same. But in 1975, the son of Elijah Muhammad took over the Nation of Islam and redirected it to Orthodox Islam. And then when Orthodox Islam came on the scene, then people began to take the traditional teachings of Islam and then incorporate that into the overcoming oppression, etc. And it was that transition that we went through from 1975 up until the present day that you see happening now, where people wanted to overcome the oppression but using the traditional Orthodox teachings of Islam to do it.
We're talking to Kashif Abdul-Karim, who is the resident imam of Muhammad Islamic Center of Greater Hartford, and we'll be back after the break. Have been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches.
7,000 high school students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. So here's a 26-second message of encouragement.
Hey, I'm Matt. I know, sometimes you think no one cares if I finish high school, right? Well, I do. Me and thousands of people you've never even met. Okay, here's the thing. When you graduate, you have better opportunities to make more money, have a cool job, you know, just have a better life. So the next time you need a little support, a little motivation, just know there are a whole lot of shoulders for you to lean on. So stay in school and graduate.
Do you have 26 seconds to convince a student to stay at their desk? Now you can share your message of support at boostup.org. We can keep students in school. Visit boostup.org and take the first step. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
The caged bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still, and his tune is heard on the distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom. Leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream till the currents heat, and dips his wing in the orange sun rays and dares to claim the sky. That stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped, his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing.
Ayakata,
ayakata,
ayakufu,
ayakata,
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 ayakufu,
ayakata,
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 ayakufu,
ayakata,
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 ayakufu,
ayakata.
Sun rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird that stalks down his narrow cage can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped, his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The caged bird sings a freak.
We'll be right back.
30,000 square feet. What would you do with that kind of possibility? Would you strategize your future? Or get lost in the past? Will you fill it with stories? Or use it to empty your mind? Would you explore your spirituality? Or focus on improving your community? Will you use it to work late? Or just work it? Could you create lasting impressions? Or a brief, delicious one? Our vision for the 224? 30,000 square feet of endless possibilities.
Welcome back. We're talking to Kashif Abdul-Karim, who is the resident imam of Muhammad Islamic Center of Greater Hartford. In our last segment, you were talking about Orthodox Islam, and I know that there has been a transition that's happened from the days of the Nation of Islam to where we are today. So explain that a little bit more so people better understand it.
Okay. From 1930 to 1975, the Nation of Islam was at its fullness. They were practicing concepts that were Islamic in terms of their behavior practices, but their belief system was different than Orthodox Islam. They talked about things like the white man as a devil, their belief in Farad as a god in modern day times. Those kind of things, man is God and white man is a devil, and different other kind of concepts that were associated with Nation of Islam thinking was not the traditional Orthodox teaching that was around the world. So from 1930 to 1975, that was the traditional teaching that was put forward. And that was the period where you found Malcolm X at his fullness, and people focused on that particular piece. But then we have to remember that then Malcolm went on Hajj. And when Malcolm went on Hajj, he then came back and had an understanding of the Orthodox principle of Islam too. And he then began to change his thinking, et cetera, from those things. He had got that advice actually from a man, Wardi Muhammad, the son of Elijah Muhammad. And he had got that information, advice from him and his sister, etc. And they had decided that he decided that his teachings were no longer going to be applicable to the Nation of Islam. So he separated the Black Nationalist movement from the religion. So people would still practice religion, which he felt would be Islam, Orthodox Islam. But at the same time, he would deal with Black nationalism separately. So he would then be able to work with other people as well. He'd be able to work with Christians, he'd be able to work with even white people that were interested in the common good. So then, after Malcolm was assassinated, Malcolm died, etc., then there was a period that moved us forward into 1975. When 1975 came, that's when Elijah Muhammad passed away. And the son of Elijah Muhammad then took over the movement of the Nation of Islam. So at that particular time period, people thought that he was going to keep to the traditional teachings of the Nation of Islam, but his father had wanted Imam Wardi Muhammad, the son of Elijah Muhammad, to take the community further. And to take it further, that required him embracing Orthodox Islam and these particular things. So then from 1975 to 1978, Minister Louis Farrakhan, who was part of the community at that particular time, he was a member of the Nation of Islam and a member of the Orthodox movement that we were doing, then in 1978 decided that the teachings of Elijah Muhammad was getting lost. It was getting misconstrued or was becoming forgotten. So he wanted to restore the teachings of the Nation of Islam. So he then, in talking to Imam Muhammad and others, he decided to restart the Nation of Islam back up again in 1978. So then he took maybe about 5% to 10% of the community who wanted that overcoming oppression, that Black nationalism, that old teaching of 3 years ago, he brought that back. And he then began a split. The Nation of Islam and the movement of Imam Wardi Muhammad split. So African Americans then moved towards Orthodox Islam in the majority, about 80%. But then there was still 20% that was still caught up or following the teachings of the old teachings of Elijah Muhammad.
And so
which
breaking,
Farrakhan was reestablishing.
So breaking that down a little bit for those that are listening, there's Orthodox Islam, and you're talking about Hajj. And so that's the experience of going to Mecca.
Right.
And for Christians who are listening or Jewish people who are listening, that's where we come together with the Abrahamic tradition. So we have Abraham, who was the father of Ishmael, and also the father of Isaac.
Right.
So we have the split between Jews and Muslims, but it's still the same family.
Right, we all share the same father, Abraham.
That's right. So we still have that same connection. And so when we look at Hajj, it's based on that experience of Hagar out in the desert with her child when they were abandoned, really, by Abraham.
And we always emphasize, this is a story that celebrated of a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
Who did all these things. Hagar was an African woman who, with her son, we say Ishmael, Christians say Isaac, did a sacrifice, and that sacrifice is remembered in the Islamic traditions of an African woman. And we can't forget that at the foot of Mecca was founded by the overcoming the oppression that was taking place by an African woman.
That's right.
So that place that was established there then gave birth to our Prophet Muhammad. So we have to always think about giving credit then to the African woman who was, through overcoming oppression that she had to face, established the foundation for Islamic tradition too.
And also it's the importance of recognizing we're all one big family.
Oh,
we came from Abraham. If we love Abraham and remember our own heritage, then we have to have some affection for our cousins as well.
Yeah.
We're talking to Kashif Abdul-Karim, who is the resident imam of Muhammad Islamic Center of Greater Hartford. And this has been an exciting first segment. We're going to have you come back again next week. But for people that are listening today and want to know more about the Muhammad Islamic Center, how do they find out more? And when do you meet and where are you?
Well, we're at 155 Hungover Street in Hartford, Connecticut. We're open every day, 24 hours a day. And we have our 5 daily prayers that we do every single day, and we come at those particular times. So people need to understand the masjid is always open, and it's always welcoming to anybody who wants to come and get general information. They can't come anytime for that, anytime. They can just walk in the door. And people will be there, inshallah, God willing, that will be able to help them understand if they have questions or set up an appointment or a time to be able to come in and speak with us. Now, we have our general services on Friday. Friday is our religious day, like Christians have Sunday and Jews have Saturday. Muslims have Friday. And so Friday is our time that we come together and have our religious service. That's at 1:15 on Friday all year round. And then on Sunday, we have our public address, which is our, we call it our Talim service. That takes place from 1 to 3 o'clock. And that's a time period where we invite the community to come in and hear and ask questions and concerns, etc. Every second Sunday, we have what's called the Dawah Day. That's a specific day that we invite the community to come in and ask questions or talk about anything that's particularly designed for them. That's for a non-Muslim day.
Wonderful.
The second Sunday of every month.
We thank you so much for that information. We're inviting you back again for a second segment. And we've been talking with Kashif Abdul-Karim, who is the resident imam of Muhammad Islamic Center of Greater Hartford. And you can find more information about them on the web as well.
Yes.
Thank you for being with us today.
lift your hands and say, Lord, I'm saved.
Been listening to Rich Answers, a public affairs program of the Conference of Churches and a production of the 224 Ecospace. Reach out to us and tell us what you think. Look for Rich Answers, the Conference of Churches, and me, Reverend Dr. Shelley Bess, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like us, follow us, share us.